next on AM 1480 WLEA, the Newsmaker Show. Here's Ryan O'Neill.
Talking today with Alfred State History Professor Nick Waddy. Professor Waddy, thanks so much for calling in.
It's a pleasure, Ryan.
Well, I wanted to talk a little European news, as you teach European history at Alfred State College. Wanted to play for you a couple of audio clips of British Member of Parliament Nigel Farage. Farage is with a party called the UKIP, the United Kingdom Independence Party. And Farage here talking about how England cannot do any trade with the United States until next year, spring of next year. The audio here is from leading broadcasting company in England.
Which, funny enough, you promised, you said that Trump would give us a trade deal within 3 months, back in January of last year.
Yes,
that's nowhere
near
even starting. It's not.
Oh, Adrian.
Trump can't
Adrian, he would. He wanted to do a trade deal with us.
But he didn't.
And
because
we... Oh, dear. Because we said no.
Why didn't he? He's the most powerful man in the
Because
world.
We said, I'm sorry. Because our Prime Minister had to say, I'm sorry, Mr. Trump, but we're not allowed to. Because the headmaster, Barnier, has said we can't do this until much later on. And we're now supposed to be grateful that from April 2019, we can talk to Trump about a trade deal.
So, that's Nigel Farage, and when he said Barnier's the headmaster, that's a joke. He's talking about Michael Barnier, the head of the EU, the European Union. Professor Nick Waddy, your thoughts on that back and forth there between Nigel Farage and a caller on a British radio show there?
Well, basically what Farage is saying is that British don't have freedom of action at this point because they're in the EU and their trade arrangements are sort of filtered through the EU. So he's right that Trump may want to do a deal with Britain. Britain may want to do a deal with Trump, but it's literally impossible as long as Britain is entangled with the EU, and it is taking a considerable amount of time for that those negotiations to produce a resolution that leads to Britain leaving the EU. So he's right. Basically, they're in a holding pattern.
Now, this next audio clip is the same two guys. It's Adrian, the caller, calling into a political show in England on the leading broadcasting company's radio station. And Adrian is slamming Nigel Farage here about the £40 billion that British Prime Minister Theresa May paid the European Union to get out of the European Union.
You are having to come to terms with two concepts that you've never had to deal with before. One is the exercise of power, which you've never had, and the other one is reality and giving people the truthful messages, which you've never had. And in fact, all the promises you made in the referendum, we won't have to pay anything to leave. Wrong.
No, we don't. No, Adrian, we don't have to pay anything to leave.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't.
Happen, Nigel.
No, we don't. Hang on, Adrian.
Can't stop it.
We're not hostages. We haven't got to pay him a penny. The fact our Prime Minister has agreed to is a separate issue.
And from what I can tell, now, you might know better there, Professor Waddy, from what I can tell, Theresa May wanted to pay the dues that England apparently owed for being in the EU. I wasn't quite clear on that myself. Did you have any thoughts there?
Well, basically, Farage is saying that Britain has the right to leave the EU, which it does. And in order to do that, there's no special tax or fee that they have to pay. So they could just cut their ties with the EU. But if you look at it from Theresa May's perspective, the Prime Minister, she wants to separate from the EU, but she wants to do it responsibly and in a way that preserves some sort of relationship and good trade ties. So she's probably thinking, well, £40 billion is not much money in the grand scheme of things. It's relatively cheap if it buys a little goodwill from the EU. So, it's probably a sweetener to make the bitter pill of Brexit go down a little easier. And, you know, that's politics. So to blame Farage for that is ridiculous, as he says. I mean, he supported Brexit for some very good reasons. And if the Prime Minister feels that she needs to negotiate terms of Brexit in a way that, you know, isn't entirely what Farage would have preferred. Well, that's just, again, politics.
A Brexit aftermath issue, and it's the Northern Ireland border issue. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said, it was either Monday or Tuesday that she said this, that Ireland can count on Germany on the issue of Northern Ireland's border. And I took that to mean Germany will put pressure on England on this issue. What kind of pressure would you think Merkel would put on British Prime Minister Theresa May about this?
Well, I presume what Germany wants and what most of Europe wants is a soft Brexit, meaning that Britain would leave the EU, but it would retain as many ties as humanly possible. And I'm sure that what the Germans want is not a solid border between Northern Ireland and Ireland. They want continued trade and free access over that border. So. I'm guessing that's what they're referring to. And there's a big debate in Britain about the terms of Brexit, and I'll be fascinated to see how it gets resolved, because the entanglements are mind-boggling. The legal entanglements, the financial and economic entanglements. It is not an easy thing to join an organization like the EU, and it is almost unimaginable to leave it. So, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for Theresa May. She's in a difficult position. She's executing a policy which, at least at the time of the referendum, the majority of the British people wanted her to execute. But she's under tremendous pressure on the one hand, to water down Brexit so much that it isn't a real Brexit, and on the other hand, to make a clean break, and she can't. You can't do either of those things realistically. So, you know, she's in a no-win situation, and whatever terms are ultimately agreed on, they're not going to be perfect. They're not going to satisfy everyone. But at the end of the day, Britain did something historic. It decided to leave the EU, and the EU is something which has expanded and broadened and deepened, and it's been marching in lockstep in one direction for 50, 60 years, and now it's not. So that's a great accomplishment, and no one deserves more credit for that than Nigel Farage.
Another European question for you, Professor Wadi. The Hungarian foreign minister told the press earlier this week that Hungary should be able to control its own borders, referring to the immigration situation there in Hungary. Viktor Orban, the Hungarian prime minister, is very vocal in not wanting Muslims to come over to Hungary. The prime minister there describes the Muslim immigrants, as a Muslim invasion force. That's what he called them, and he made no secret of not wanting them in Hungary. Poland is not much different these days. I want to talk about Poland in a moment, but your thoughts first on what the Hungarian prime minister said.
Well, he's really exposing one of the central weaknesses in the structure of the EU and the policies of the EU. Theoretically, at this point, every EU state, sovereign state, does still control its own immigration policies. But because there's free movement within the EU, once one state lets in a refugee, an immigrant, what have you, they can go pretty much anywhere. So that's a problem, because what you have is a situation in which European countries are sovereign in some respects, but not in others. And on an issue like immigration, that is a recipe for total disaster and chaos. So I think Hungary is trying to assert its sovereign right to control immigration to Hungary, and you know, I would see that as quite reasonable. But what we may be seeing is the beginning of the end of the EU, because they've had similar problems with finance. In some ways, the finances of European states are coordinated, and in some ways they're not. And that's a very awkward situation and perhaps not sustainable. So there may be a sense in which the EU at some point either needs to effectively coordinate its policies or it needs to end, because basically it's in limbo right now.
Talking to Alfred State Professor of History, Professor Nicholas Waddy, Poland, I don't know if I'd say they're in a similar situation. I would say that there's been objections from Polish voters and some of the Polish leaders about Muslim immigrants coming in. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, it's basically a similar situation all throughout Eastern Europe. The Eastern Europeans have their own problems, and they don't think that the borders should be flung open, and any refugee who can find a better life in Europe should be allowed to come there. That's what some Europeans believe, but it's certainly not what they believe in Eastern Europe. And religion plays a role in it, for sure.
Well, from the reports that I read from numerous media outlets, it all seemed to indicate that some of the Polish leaders and a good percentage of the Polish people were fearful of losing the one religion character of their characteristic of their country, which is Catholicism in Poland. And the fear that they've expressed is that letting a lot of immigrants in who belong to a different religion would completely change things. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, I'm sure that's how some Poles see it. For some, it would be a religious question. For some, it would be an economic question. For some, presumably, it would be a racial question. But I don't think you would find very many Poles who are eager to embrace large-scale migration from North Africa or the Middle East. So, but yeah, I think religion would probably be a significant part of it. And Europe has its problems in assimilating Muslims. The Europeans don't have the good track record that we have, relatively speaking, when it comes to assimilation. And a lot of Muslims are ghettoized in Europe, and to some degree their policies, because they support multiculturalism as opposed to assimilation, they've exacerbated this problem. So all the polls we have to do is look to the West and see how Muslims are faring in Germany or France or Italy, and a lot of them are ghettoized, and a lot of them are very angry, and some of them are terrorists. So they see that as a problem, and they see it as something that could happen in Poland. Truthfully, though, I think these migrants who are coming from the Middle East and North Africa mostly don't want to go to Poland. They don't want to go to Hungary either. They want to go to where they think they will have the highest standard of living and will be treated the best. And that's countries like Sweden, Netherlands, Germany, France, Britain. But they're having increasing difficulty going to any of those countries. So, bottom line, I don't think Poland needs to worry about a flood tide of Muslim immigration that will dramatically alter the culture of Poland.
Talking with Alfred State Professor Nicholas Waddy. Going to take a quick break back on Newsmaker in just a moment.
It's the Spring Sales Event at Maple City Dodge. Lease a 2018 Jeep Cherokee Limited 4x4 for $369 for 39 months. Or lease a 2018 Jeep Cherokee Latitude Plus 4x4 for $351 a month for 39 months.
Must be a well-qualified returning lease. Leases include 10,000 miles a year and first payment due at signing. All taxes and fees included except DMV.
The leases are hot this spring at Maple City Dodge. Come talk to the Dodge boys and get the real deal every time.
At Walker Metalsmiths, we don't worry about what's going to be the next big thing. We follow an ancient path with our Celtic traditions, and I follow my heart as a designer.
Sometime, what Steve makes has become trends with other jewelers.
When we first made Celtic knotwork rings, there were hardly any other jewelers making them.
Now the field is not so lonely.
We certainly didn't invent rose gold. When it was still very rare, it was already one of our specialties.
Now you see it everywhere, from the high-end designers to the big-box stores.
Savorite green garnet has long been one of my favorite gems.
Until recently, most people had never heard of it. But now it's one of the hottest gemstones on the market.
In the big scheme of things, ours is a small workshop in a little village. Maybe small towns will be the next big thing.
Steve, you live in your own world. You're going to continue to make beautiful jewelry on your own terms for customers who appreciate your own special vision, skill, and art.
Walker Metalsmith's Celtic Jewelry is at 1 Main Street in the Village of Andover. Open 9 to 5 weekdays, 10 to 3 Saturdays, or anytime at walkerscelticjewelry.com.
Checking in now with meteorologist Rob Carolyn, who, from what I understand, has the snow miser in his office this morning.
Yes, I do, and I actually have heat miser, though he's nowhere to be found. I'm going to have to put him in a prominent place on my desk because we need some warmth around here, Brian. The cold continues. Boy, we're looking at a big storm. Another one in the Gulf of Maine this morning, southeast of Cape Cod. It dumped almost a foot of snow in the city. They picked up over 8 inches in Central Park. Islip, Long Island last night had a foot of snow fall in 3 hours. 1 hour, they had 5 inches of snow come down. That's pretty impressive, but that storm's pulling away. What it does, though, is it continues to circulate cold air down out of Ontario, keeping our temperatures below normal. We want the winds out of the southwest, not out of the north. And nothing really showing up that's going to bring us southwesterly winds anytime soon. A lot of cloudiness out there this morning, Brian, looking at the satellite photos. Looks like these northerly winds, they'll have the tendency to continue to bring in some moisture. I think we could see a passing flurry. I've got a few patches where some sun is out right now, but generally looking south of the thruway, skies are kind of partly to mostly cloudy. Temperatures will be 35 to 40. Tonight, we stay partly to mostly cloudy. We're 20 to 25. There will be some clouds Friday and some scattered flurries and snow showers. We're 35 to 40. Partly to mostly cloudy Friday night, 20. By Saturday, it turns partly sunny, 35 to 40. Brian, our next shot at seeing temperatures get into the 40s would be Sunday. Sunday afternoon, I think we're about 45.
That'll be nice to experience, Rob.
Yeah, it'd be a welcome change to actually feel temperatures up near normal levels for this time of year.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, sir.
Back on Newsmakers, Brian O'Neill on today with Alfred State Professor of History, Professor Nicholas Wani. Wanted to talk about tariffs and the topic of free trade with you. Did you have any thoughts on? I haven't had you on since President Trump made his announcement about tariffs. So I want you to weigh in on that, Professor Wani.
Right. Well, I'm not an expert on economics, so it's hard for me to analyze the specific rationale for the tariffs on steel and aluminum those tariffs have been promulgated already by President Trump. But basically, I'm in full agreement with President Trump that the problem here is that we have been taken advantage of by other countries for a very long time. And any time an American president or the Congress thinks of pushing back and saying, you can't do that to us, we're going to consider some form of retaliation, the press and the elite howls about the prospect of retaliation and trade wars, and we can't possibly do that. And we haven't done that. We've done very little of it over the years. So, this is why we have a trade deficit of hundreds of billions of dollars. It's not because American workers can't compete in the world. It's because we are disadvantaged in the trade terms that we have with other countries. And there's simply no way to fix that problem unless we're willing to stand up for ourselves. And yes, it does involve some risk because there could be trade wars, there could be trade standoffs, there could be tension, there could be retaliation. But I think, President Trump has said, and I agree with him, that ultimately we're the ones with the leverage. We have the greatest economy in the world and the greatest market in the world. And anybody who wants to start a trade war with the United States will be sacrificing access to that market. They're just not going to do that. So I think whatever trade wars we have are going to be brief. And whatever trade wars we have, we're going to win. So it's time that somebody stood up for this country and for the American worker. And it's great to see that President Trump is willing to do it. And it can't be easy because, you've got the whole Washington elite saying, oh, no, and polite, that's dangerous. Nobody's done that before, which is not entirely true, but he's prepared to go to the mat for the American worker, and I think it's great.
Professor Wani, I wanted to talk about Robert Mueller and Andrew McCabe, starting out with the FBI's Andrew McCabe being forced out by the FBI's Ethics Committee, apparently. Your thoughts there?
Well, of course, Democrats and the media want to say that he's the victim of Trumpian tyranny, and they can say that all they want. But the fact fact of the matter is it wasn't Sessions who found him to be in violation of the professional ethics of the FBI. It was an independent committee. And the key people on that committee were not appointed by Trump. They were appointed by, as I understand it, Obama and, I forget, another person, but not Trump. So, you know, this is the FBI's internal process, which has found McCabe to be weaker and a liar, basically. And they don't tolerate that at the FBI. So, you know, to lose a portion of your pension right before you're going to receive it stinks, and no one would like that. But McCabe and other people in the FBI, State Department, Obama administration did some very questionable things. And honestly, I think losing part of his pension is the least of McCabe's problems. There's a lot of talk now about a second special counsel to investigate what went on at the FBI and the dossier, and I hope a lot of other things. And as I've written, we need that. There's been a huge amount of scrutiny, legal scrutiny, placed on the Trump administration, and for the most part, as we can tell, they haven't found anything.
How about, and speaking of that, Robert Mueller, your thoughts on the latest there?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the latest is that Trump tweeted, as Trump does, and Trump had some unkind things to say about the Mueller investigation. And again, it's a free country. He has a right to defend himself. He has a right to feel like he's being targeted, and the investigation is proliferating and expanding into areas that were never contemplated when Mueller was hired. And there are a lot of reasons to be troubled by the Mueller investigation, probably most of all the fact that everyone on the staff is in attack for Democrats and Hillary Clinton and hates Trump and wants to nail him. So he's got some legitimate concerns, and the bottom line is criticizing is not obstructing. President Trump has never obstructed anything. This investigation is going forward. The administration is cooperating with it, and he doesn't have to like it, and no Republican has to like it. And who knows what Mueller will ultimately do, but whatever he produces in the end will be very suspect because of the very flawed nature of his investigation.
Wanted to ask Alfred State Professor of History, Nicholas Waddy, his thoughts on the current events in North Korea. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave that for next week because we are out of time. Professor Waddy, thanks so much for coming on.
It was fantastic to be here. Thanks.
Thank you, Professor Waddy. And for those who are used to hearing Dr. Christian Kampf on a Thursday, Dr. Kampf is visiting Europe and found it too difficult to be able to call in on a regular basis.